Blog Talk Radio.
Down the volume just a little bit on the theme song and a little bit up on my microphone because it is Thursday night, 8 o'clock, February the 7th right now. My name is James, also known as the guy who always talks first. Joining me through the magic of the interweb, we've got Mr. K. Ross Reed.
Good evening, sir.
We've also got Mr. Adam.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Goalie, we're just going to leave it at that. And this is Off the Crossbar Live, presented to you by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com. Crossbar with a K. Hockey is going on. There's a lot of stuff to get to this evening. K-Ross came up with a bunch of stuff to talk about. Why don't you tell us about it, man?
Well, to be honest with you, James, I just went with the goalie theme today. We're going to be talking about Craig Anderson, whether or not he will be able to continue his hot start. We will once again revisit the Luongo Schneider soap opera in Vancouver. Jaromir Jagr has joined the list of the top 10 all-time NHL scorers. We're going to talk about where each of us have got him placed in the all-time list. And believe it or not, I have actually got a listener email today.
Oh, man. That's good, because I don't have any.
Well, good then.
So, yeah, there's going to be a whole bunch of other stuff. We're probably going to make fun of Adam a couple times here and there. We'll go over maybe some of our predictions for some upcoming games, because we got that new feature rolling out. And if we have time, we'll take a look at the Off the Crossbar live hockey pool that we got going up there.
Did you update that, James?
Stallion, man. Where the hell did that guy come from? I don't know, but we got all that and more coming up. But right now, it's time to go Off the Crossbar.
Okay.
You guys have any idea how lucky you are that I'm able to hit that crossbar so consistently every week?
Yeah. Good on you, man.
Hey, FYI, I am no longer just a goalie. I am also a forward and a defenseman, as proven in last week's Montreal Pond Hockey Festival.
All right, you brought it up. I want to know how you guys did.
Oh, we did. We did.
Yeah, we had a boot stomping hootenanny of a good time last weekend.
Went 3-0 on the Saturday.
And how'd you do on the Sunday?
A bye into the final, and we won. We won.
Really?
You got victory
Sunday.
And our man over here next to me, he was accountably responsible for something about like 52% of our team's goal production. It was pretty impressive.
Oh, so it's like a normal Saturday, Sunday night then?
Basically, except it won us a championship.
Oh, well, there you go. That's honestly what's been missing for the longest time now.
I even had a couple of goals.
It was an awful lot of fun.
Now, you got the championship. Now you can go win them all the time.
Yep. That's the plan.
That's the theory. Anything 35 years of age or over and rated D or below, we have got it covered.
Awesome stuff. So congratulations to you guys. Hope it was as awesome as it looked. I was unfortunately unable to come out.
I'm a gimp again.
Yeah.
How did that happen between our show that Thursday night and Friday morning? What did you do?
It didn't happen then. It happened about a month ago, to be honest with you. In case anyone's wondering, wrist is probably broken again. Not 100% sure because I haven't gone to the doctor yet, just like I did last time. But
you should really consider getting one to move in with you. It has saved me so much time in the last 6 years.
Well, if your doctor would like to come move in here at any point, she's more than welcome to.
No way. Seat's taken for us.
So probably sitting over here with a slightly broken wrist. Funny enough, not wearing my wrist brace right now. I actually took it off 2 seconds ago. Bad idea. I might have to get up halfway through the show and go get it. Unless my lovely wife picks it up for me when she walks by the sofa. So yeah, how did I break it? To be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. I'm thinking the ultimate culprit is...
Probably patting yourself on the back.
No, it was probably while I was playing on the floor with my son and put too much weight on it. And kind of felt it snap or something like that. And then after a couple unfortunate incidents and some terrible moments here at the household and the events that transpired after that didn't do it any good. And now sitting here with most likely another broken wrist. But hey, we'll get that checked out after the ball hockey season.
That a boy.
Because that's just how I roll, apparently. So yeah, hey, where do you guys want to kick off tonight?
Well, I think we should be starting with what I, in my opinion, has been one of the top stories of this young season. And I'm talking about the Between the Pipes for the Ottawa Senators, Craig Anderson.
Hold on a second. Has anybody checked out the front page of TSN today?
Oh, absolutely. The smuggest mustache in all of hockey on the move.
I just saw this for the first time right now. That's
you're talking about Uncle Tim?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, hey, the Isle of Misfit goaltenders, the Islanders, have found another misfit goaltender. A goalie who they're going to pay a lot of money to not do anything for them. It's fantastic.
Man, them and you, just to get to the cap floor.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, to be fair, the Islanders are a team who is currently at the cap floor when you count Lubomir Visnovsky's contract, which was actually just activated today. So from all outward appearances, I would say that Visnovsky is so unhappy there that they've agreed to some sort of a sign and trade immediately, that they would need that Tim Thomas money to get them back up to the cap floor.
Okay. And is he really done, or could he possibly somehow come back and play for the Islanders?
He's currently hunkered down in a bunker somewhere up in northern Alaska, hunting bears with a knife and a fishing pole, with his entire family up there as well. They're all hunkered down in the bunker. It's quite the exciting thing that they do. He's doing his soul searching. I think he's with some local natives having vision quests. And I think at the end of that, he will come to the realization that making all sorts of money and actually playing hockey is more fun than making all sorts of money and living in a pit that he's excavated with his goalie sticks. He'll be back, for sure, because he must, especially in New York. I mean, everybody wants to play on Long Island. So it won't be long. As soon as he finds out about that, he will be right back.
By the time his vision quest is over, though, they'll be the Brooklyn Islanders.
Exactly, and that'll be fantastic. It'll be exciting and fun in a brand-new stadium.
There's nothing hipsters love more than Tea Party supporters, so I'm sure that'll go over really well. let's be realistic. This is a numbers move. In my opinion, there's no way Tim Thomas, if he does play in the National Hockey League again, I don't think he's going to be playing for the New York Islanders. This is a team that, dating back to... I mean, you look at their history between the pipes, their recent history between the pipes, from promoting Garth Snow from backup goaltender to general manager, to signing Rick DiPietro for the next 150 years, to trading for Nabokov, who didn't want to be there, to trading for Tim Thomas, who isn't going to be there. Look, Phoenix East is what we need to be calling these New York Islanders. The whole situation is a joke. To be honest with you right now, this is embarrassing for hockey as compared to other sports in the New York market right now. I don't understand a lot of the reasoning behind this. I don't understand Charles Wong in the slightest. James, maybe you can make some sense out of a move like this.
Well, didn't Timmy Thomas get a business degree of some sort? I mean, maybe they're just grooming him to be the next general manager.
I was going to say team president, but...
Oh, there you go.
That's an awful... That's pretty big business for Tim Thomas to be comfortable with, if you ask me.
Do we have Moving On Up in the song repertoire there?
No, we don't.
Oh, too bad.
Not off the top of my list. Maybe somewhere in there. I'll take a look for it. Yeah, I don't know. That just caught me off guard because that was the first I'd seen it all day. When I get home from work, I don't turn on my laptop until showtime. So
we know about 15 seconds before showtime, to be precise.
All right. So that means, hey, That was goalie talk. So let's keep that goalie talk going, right?
Mr. Anderson, currently 9 games started. He's only let in 12 goals. He's got a 1.33 goals against average and a .956 save percentage. Not bad for a guy who, you know.
I mean, obviously the best goaltender in the National Hockey League through the start of this season. Victor Fast, of course, making an argument for himself in Anaheim. But if you look at the consistency from the puck drop of this season, Craig Anderson's got to be the best goaltender in the league. Is he not, James?
I'd say so, yeah. Dude's doing pretty good. What is it? He's let in 2 goals after the first period at this point?
Yeah, outside of the first period, he's been scored on twice. Both were in Tuesday's game versus the Buffalo Sabres, and that game was still a win.
Yeah.
So that ain't not bad.
Stats right there. Hey, dude's already proved that he can play in my mind. He carried a Colorado Avalanche team for almost an entire season 1 year. Got them into the playoffs that season and almost had them with the upset in the first round. I believe they were playing San Jose. And San Jose was able to come back in that series. But dude stood on his head for that Avalanche team, who, by the numbers, was not a very good team at all.
Yeah, he played 71 games that season, 38 wins, 25 losses, a .917 save percentage, and the .264 goals against. That's not
great.
Bad considering he had really nobody in front of him. Well, I mean, okay, John Michael Lyles, Kyle Komisky, Adam Foote was there, and Ruslan Soleil. That's... Yeah.
Exactly. Like, you're not aiming the cream of the crop for guys to have in front of you. And he proved more than anything that year for me that, yeah, he can be a goalie. You know, he's struggled a couple, you know, he's struggled since then. Only posting average at best numbers the year after with Colorado, but then pretty sure.
The year after was Colorado. No. The year after in Colorado was .897 and .328. It was when he moved into Ottawa that he got the .939 save percentage.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The year Colorado, he was putting up average at best numbers and then was traded to Ottawa where he started coming in more to his own. Last year had a pretty good season with the Senators, helped them out big in the playoffs. I've been saying for a while now, I think he's a pretty good goalie. And now that the Senators look to be better than a lot of people may have thought they were, granted with Spezza on the shelf, offense might be a question. But goaltending in my mind in Ottawa, sound. Is he the best goalie in the league? Yes, technically by numbers, but he's not my number one pick for a goalie.
Who is right now?
Right now? Oh, jeez.
Corey Crawford.
No, to be honest with you, and this is going to sound really stupid, it's mainly because I've seen him play more than anybody else. Devan Dubnyk has been incredible in the situation that he's been thrown into in Edmonton right now. I don't think he's going to get nearly enough credit for his spectacular play that he has been putting up because the team in front of him is pretty bad.
Yeah, they're not exactly defensively gifted, that's for sure.
But the fact that the Oilers have at least 1 point in all but, I think, 2 of their games so far this season is a testament to how good he is playing.
Yeah, I think you really start to see a goaltender's character shine through when you get into those tight games. I mean, we talk about how much of an advantage the New Jersey Devils have all the time in a shortened season just because Brodeur will go in and steal points, you know, once or twice a week and end up in overtime in a game that they really shouldn't be. And I think in that essence, we're really seeing Dubnyk start to shine. But to be perfectly honest with you, that's also the reason I've got Anderson as my top goaltender in the league right now. When you go down those stats and you start to get into things that are a little bit more detailed, you see that the guy's faced 274 shots this year, which is second in the entire National Hockey League. So it's not like the Senators are putting up massive defensive efforts in front of him. I know Carlson has a big name on the blue line, but he's mostly offensively minded, and they don't really have a whole lot of stay-at-home minds in Ottawa. So to be giving up 275 shots and still leading the league in save percentage, that's impressive.
Funnily enough, the one goalie that's ahead of him in shots against would be Devan Dubnyk with 323.
Oh, there you go. At least 30 to 40 shots a game, almost.
And that's what we're seeing. Like, these guys, it's one thing to put up great numbers when you're Marty Brodeur facing 20 shots a night, but to be facing double that and to literally be doing twice the work, we're seeing the emergence of some very fine young goaltenders right now.
Yep.
Yeah, right now, if I was picking goalies for a team, as much as I would really want to take Craig Anderson, from what I have seen, because I can only go with what I've seen, and I haven't actually watched the Senators at all this year. So my 1-2 goalie pair would be Carey Price and then Devan Dubnyk.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I think Price is entering the peak that we all thought he would be attaining at this point in his career, and we're starting to see, now that he's finally got a decent team in front of him, he's really an elite-level goaltender.
Yep. Oh, for sure. And if I'm not mistaken, last night during the doubleheader, Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, pegged Carey Price as the starting goalie for next year's Canadian Olympic team.
And that is actually a decision that I think we're going to get discussing a little bit. We're going to look at two different Olympic teams and what they will do with their goaltenders when we get to our listener email later on.
Oh, good stuff. Awesome. I can't wait.
So, I think it actually is a very interesting debate. Some very good points raised when you look at a potential changing of the guard in two very important Olympic creases for the upcoming games in Sochi.
Yeah, totally for sure. And I'm right there with Carey Price. I'm not saying he's...
We'll get to it later, bud.
I'm really close to right now saying Carey Price is the best goalie in the league.
Well, keep your horse in the barn. You'll get a chance to say again later whether or not you've actually come to that conclusion.
It's very close for me right now because, you know, I wasn't a big supporter of him a couple years ago, but he kind of sucked a couple years ago.
The whole team sucked a couple years ago.
But dude has really come into his own, and I think right now, man, when a guy is on his game, I don't think anyone's better than him.
Ain't that the way goalies always go?
All right, so are we still on Anderson?
I think we've beaten Anderson to death.
All right, poor guy.
Alex Auld, reincarnated, as he's called.
Adam, where are you on the Anderson debate?
Oh, yeah, where do you have him in your top five?
Right now?
Yeah.
In my top five, certainly. I'd probably put Pricey ahead of him just because I'm a total homer, as we all know. And also, I've seen more of Price. Anderson has definitely been solid as all hell, and he has the numbers to prove it. I mean, truth be told, if I'm being dead honest about it right now, he probably, at this point in the season, yeah, he's probably the number one.
Well, as James pointed out last week, every game is such a significant percentage of the season at this point. I mean, we can look at the guy who is 10 games in. That's a fifth of the season. That's a pretty good measuring stick. I mean, you've got enough to go on there. And the numbers don't lie when you look particularly at goaltenders. Mm-hmm. And right now the numbers say Anderson's the guy.
Yep. And, I mean, yeah, he started. They're up 1-0 right now at the end of the first. So, I mean, yeah, so far so good. All right, so Mr. Anderson, you're doing great. Good for you. Keep it up.
Your Vezina's in the mail.
Just not when you play against Montreal. You have to not be good in it. Okay.
Or at least be distracted by terrible calls.
And so we move from the East Coast to the West Coast. Actually, first, let's stay on the East Coast. Fleury. You bump into him. He rolls 20 feet back. I don't know if you saw that replay from earlier tonight.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hard to believe that forward actually had a shotgun in the seat of his pants.
Helmet came off and everything. I think that's something we should probably talk about, too, is just the ridiculous overprotectiveness that the referees are displaying for the goaltenders in the league right now. It's excessive. I wonder if I can find some numbers on the amount of goaltender interference calls involved. No, but I mean, it's been crazy this year. Every time, if you fart near a goaltender, you're put in the box for 2 minutes. It's pathetic.
Well, what gets me is the number. I'm all right with, look, if the owners, if the general managers, whoever it is that is sort of petitioning the National Hockey League or the Referees Association to start making these calls. I'm okay with the concept of protecting a goaltender if you feel like that's an issue, because we all know in the National Hockey League, there are half the teams want to pass the puck around the outside and you know, move pucks through traffic into the crease. That is the tactic du jour. That is the way you score goals in the National Hockey League. So if these owners and general managers really want to protect the goaltenders a little bit more, I'm okay with that. But it's what's happening outside of the crease that bothers me. It's when a goaltender is 2 feet past the blue paint and he's getting bumped and the goal's being called off.
And not even really bumped, like just seeing someone there and seizing the opportunity. I mean,
why do we have a crease?
Yeah, and of course, as a goaltender, it's to your advantage. If you can get away with, you know, you bumping into someone and making it look like they bumped you and drawing a penalty for your team, then great. But it's getting pathetic.
And it's something that really surprised me, I think, because, you know, we are, as I mentioned, 9 or 10 games into this season, depending on you know, which team you're following. I don't recall this being a hot-button issue at any point over the last 2 or 3 seasons. I don't recall hearing any general managers complaining or even any goaltenders necessarily complaining about the crease not being enforced. Yeah, but I mean, Ryan Miller can't go to McDonald's without complaining about someone parking too close to him. I mean, the guy has issues. We all know that. But is this actually a problem that was brought about by the National Hockey League goaltenders? Or was it the general manager? Who was complaining about this?
I think James, Uncle Gary just wanted
did you hear,
power plays.
James, do you recall hearing anything about this?
I remember Adam complaining about this and that and the other thing, but that's just Adam complaining. He's kind of like Ryan Miller.
Gimpy McGimperson watching.
I don't know. Holmstrom's retired, so I thought that would have solved everyone's problem. I have no idea.
this is like the ultimate phantom call. This is literally an executive decision to start making phantom calls for no reason. This was an unprovoked decision to start making phantom calls.
Basically.
A phantom of the phantom.
You know, it's a weird thing because it gets into, I don't want to say the whole player safety thing, because, yeah, there are guys that are running goalies. I've seen that in games so far this season. Like the Calgary-Edmonton game, Dubnyk got run a couple times.
Well, yeah, I'm all for a guy getting run. That's different.
Yeah, this here, I don't know. This isn't protecting the goalies.
Well, it's very difficult to back into a goaltender hard enough to hurt him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what this is. I don't want to necessarily call out the officiating so far this year, but in the 10 games that I have watched, there's been some really bad stuff going on.
Well, that's just it, and I don't think it's a matter of calling out individual officials. I think this was clearly a prerogative set forth from somebody up top. I think somebody had a meeting with the officials at some point and said, listen, we need to start calling this more tightly. I think it's time to have that meeting again and say, are you guys serious? Did you hear me?
Well, I haven't seen anything too egregious and when it comes to goaltender interference. I've seen some stuff that, honestly, I think should have been called, but wasn't.
Really? Because there were 2 calls, and specifically, I'm thinking back to, just off the top of my head, the Montreal-Ottawa game this week, where, quite honestly, Ottawa should have been headed to overtime with Montreal. Montreal had no business winning that game in regulation. Carey Price was a foot outside of his crease, mildly grazed, in a way that really made no effect at all on his ability to stop the puck and have the goal called back. And not 10 seconds into that game, the only reason that Ottawa had a 1-0 lead during that game was about 20 seconds in, Thomas Plekanec, as Adam stated, I believe farted in the vicinity of the crease and ended up in the penalty box, giving the Senators a power play, but 15 seconds into the game. It does appear to be And, I mean, again, maybe it's not happening on the West Coast. I don't stay up as late as you stay up, James. But in the East Coast games, it certainly seems to be very frequent so far this season.
I really think, like, if you take a look at Fleury tonight, it was crap. He literally tossed himself back and made his helmet come off and everything into the crease. It was ridiculous. And I really think that it should go both ways. Fine, if the refs want to call, goaltender interference and stuff like that, fine, if it's a true interference penalty. However, if the goalie's embellished, especially to that extent, it should be a double minor, if not even a 5-minute penalty, just for these ridiculous theatrical, hurls to the ground they do, because it's pathetic. It's really, it's making a farce of something that's already a farce, and it's just, it's not good.
Agree.
Yeah, and especially with Fleury tonight, it did look like he'd been taken out with a shotgun. Like, he looked like he was never going to skate again.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of that. Maybe it is going on a lot more in the East. I personally have actually not watched a game from the Eastern Conference this year.
At all? Dude.
I have only watched games from the West.
I've only watched games from the East.
I've watched,
but that makes sense because of where I live. You're just crazy.
Obviously I've seen the Oiler games. I think I watched LA play somebody the other night. Chicago, I've seen a couple, a little bit of their stuff. St. Louis, some of their stuff as well. I haven't seen anything too crazy in terms of that. I've definitely seen instances where I think goalie interference should have been called, but wasn't. But I haven't seen the phantom calls, and I haven't seen too many floppers yet either.
You will. Keep watching. Maybe. Well, with all that experience on the West Coast, you've had a front row seat to the soap opera that is As the Crease Turns in Vancouver. Mike Liut, player agent and former Washington Capitals goaltender, agent for Corey Schneider, speaking out, very concerned about Schneider's playing time, sort of penciling out an extreme worst-case scenario, saying, what happens if Luongo is there all 48 games and plays 40 of them. Is it really a problem to have these two guys in Vancouver right now, in your opinion, James?
It's kind of like one of them yes and no answers. Like, no, it's not a problem because you have two goalies that can probably get the job done on a night-in, night-out basis sort of thing. Luongo has proven that so far this season, I'd say more than Schneider has. But Schneider, when called upon, has pretty much held his own. It's not like he's letting in 6 or 7 goals a game.
No, he had one bad outing, and that was it.
Yeah. But it's kind of like the whole PK situation here in Montreal. Whatever you want to call it, when it's off the ice and it has nothing to technically do with the team, but you know you're going to get questions about it. You know every single one of those guys in Vancouver is getting asked every day, what do you think about the goaltending situation, blah, 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 blah. It's going to just annoy the hell out of guys.
So you think the distraction factor is probably more of an actual issue than just what's going on in the room?
Yeah. And then you have Luongo going out on Twitter saying, after 4 straight starts, going, man, being a backup is fun. I know he's not maybe he was, because I don't know him or anything like that. But that's kind of like a nice, subtle little jab at the team.
It's also just the mirror image of last year. Last year it was the reverse. It was Luongo who was supposed to be the starter. Everybody, he's their horse or whatever. And then Schneider had a great year and so just took the minutes away. This year you've got Luongo, who's, currently sitting third in the league goals against with a 153. He's got, 3 wins, 2 overtime losses, and a .940 save percentage. I mean, he's earning the minutes. He's earning he's winning, he's playing well. So it's just the exact opposite of what happened last year. And it's just, again, it's a good situation for a team to be in. right? I mean, you know, two great goalies. If Luongo does start to go down, pop Schneider back in. Like, yeah, there's going to be controversy. Vancouver's a hockey town, just like Montreal, just like Toronto, just like anywhere else in Canada, and it'll make news. But, I mean, you know, if you believe Luongo last year, you know, he was very humble about it and saying, you know, well, you know, what's best for the team, no, 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 no. You know, the off-season trade stuff was all over the place, but he was never – I don't recall him ever being openly critical of it, was he? Am I completely wrong in that?
No, Luongo's always been a good soldier. I mean, I think realistically the issue in Vancouver right now comes down to the fact that nobody really believes that it's possible to have two goaltenders because it's never been done before.
I know that
Adam looks at the St. Louis situation and says, okay, here are two very good goaltenders. What do we do? But I think that the situation is maybe a little bit different than it is in St. Louis. I think that with both Brian Elliott and Yaroslav Halak, both were brought in around about the same time, and both were brought in with the idea that maybe they could be a number one. I think when you look at Roberto Luongo and Corey Schneider, both are clearly number ones, whereas Elliott and Halak sort of grew into, okay, over the last two years, okay, now they're both number one. They're both very good. This situation sort of came about organically. What do we do with it? Versus heading into this year, the Vancouver Canucks knew for a fact they had two number one goaltenders and that they should probably trade one. So when I look at it, the situation actually seems more similar to the Pittsburgh Penguins, where people look at it and say, okay, historically speaking, if you go by the book, you can't have two number one centers. It's not going to work. And yet they win a Stanley Cup. Now, is Crosby as good a player? Are his numbers as good on a team with Malkin as they would be if he were the number one guy? No, Crosby's not as complete a hockey player with Malkin in the lineup because he doesn't need to be. And Malkin, we know for a fact, is clearly not nearly as complete a hockey player when playing alongside Sid. But this isn't about what's good enough for these two players. Because the Pittsburgh Penguins are better with the two of them there. And I think you may be looking at a situation in a lockout shortened season, in a very obscure contractual situation with Roberto Luongo right now. Maybe the Vancouver Canucks are going to prove this year that Luongo may not have his greatest year, Schneider may not have his greatest year, but if the two of them have an above-average year each, the Vancouver Canucks could become a power to be reckoned with.
But that's the thing. If you look at Halak and Elliott in St. Louis last year, Halak had 46 starts, Elliott had 38 starts. So they pretty much split down the middle. Halak won 26, 12, and 7 with a .926 save percentage and a .197 goals against. Elliott, 23, 10, and 4 with a .940 and a .156. You know, they split the duties pretty much right down
the
middle.
Plan.
Both had stellar seasons. No, but that's the way
That's the way it ended up working out. But that's exactly my point, is that the situation in St. Louis came about more organically. If you want to do it in Vancouver, you need to think of a way to work with two starting goaltenders. Because if Elliott had continued where he was last year, or Halak, or whoever, if St. Louis had just picked a goaltender, hitched their reins to him and said, this is our guy, and he had never gotten hurt,
well, I think they
would
exactly
not have gone with two goaltenders.
Well, no, but I think
they
that's why Elliott
necessity.
Got as much chance as he did, because
exactly.
Halak ended up getting hurt. True.
Whereas Vancouver can't do that. They can't, in the situation they're in right now, pick their guy and run with him, because that's suicide. That's devastating for the other guy. So what they need to do as a management structure is actually construct a system that accommodates two number one goaltenders.
Boom, old school Pee-wee style. Goalie one plays until halfway through the second period, and goalie two picks up. Done.
Sure. It's a great idea. But this is exactly what's going to need to happen in Vancouver this year if they plan on keeping these two guys and running with it. So, James, you see that happening?
No.
No?
So what do you think's going to happen? Somebody's got to go?
Yeah, someone has to go. Like, I don't believe that it will coexist properly with the two. You know, the organization already came out last year saying Corey Schneider was our starter going forward. Like, mm-hmm. they have not necessarily turn the page on Luongo, but they did everything they can to not support him with the fans and the media in that city.
And that may be the best thing for Roberto Luongo's image that ever happened to him.
Yeah.
He's been doing an awful lot better, and it seems to me that the fans and the media like him an awful lot more now that the pressure's off. Now he can make funny comments on Twitter. Now he can just laugh and make jokes about Mike Gillis's coin and how lucky it is to keep coming out on, you know, four in a row coin tosses. Because now he can be endearing, and now the pressure's off. Maybe for half a season this is what works.
How much is it going to suck then if Luongo wins the starter's position because he has a great first half of this half season? They trade Schneider away. And then Luongo sucks again, and everybody hates him, and he asks for a trade again.
That would suck, but it would suck not nearly as much as if you finally did trade Luongo after he got hot again, and it turns out Corey Schneider sucks.
Yeah. No,
that would be the even worse by far, would be to let him get hot again and then go, all right, well, we'll see you later.
I think at this point, I feel almost like there's no win to the situation in Vancouver. At least for this season.
There's no Stanley Cup win.
Because you have to play Luongo, because you need him to prove to other teams that they need him, sort of thing. And in the meantime, you're just pissing off Schneider every single game. And, you know, dude's paid his time. He's done his thing as the backup, and he wants his shot now. And, yeah, he could just sit there and wait longer until he gets it for real this time. But at the same time, you got to look at it and go, well, man, these guys already promised me this job, and it ain't mine.
But what if it's a new job?
There's a way to.
What if there are now two jobs? Just for half a season. Obviously, I don't think this is going to be a solution moving forward long term. I just think there's too much ego, there's too much tradition to go against. But at some point, teams break the mold. This could be the year Vancouver does it, and I would like to see it happen.
Vancouver's got to do something eventually. I mean, to be...
I don't think anybody's getting traded out of Vancouver this season. I think Luongo's going to be there for the season, and, you know, something in the off season will come up, and he'll get traded for a number one pick and, I don't know, probably some help down the middle for Vancouver. Because also, like, hey, let's not forget the fact that, hey, Vancouver is still being Vancouver right now. But from what I have seen of them, the Sedins have not been the Sedins of the days of old.
Not at all.
When was the last time you could remember that both Daniel and Henrik were on the ice or a Vancouver power play in which a goal was scored and neither of them got a point on it?
It's pretty rare. It is,
very
but it's
rare. But
and this year, what they've got.
The funny thing is, though, we talk about what's wrong with Vancouver, and it seems to come up every year because they're only going to be in the top four. There are a lot of teams, Edmonton, Calgary, a lot of teams on this side of the border that we've pretty damn pleased to have their best result over the last 5 years be the Vancouver Canucks' worst.
Well, I've been saying there's more wrong in Vancouver than just the goaltending since, well into last season.
Well, sure, but they're still sitting on top of their division right now.
Yeah, but
there can't be that much wrong. They've got two of the hottest goaltenders in the world right now. They're in first place in their division. They've been to the playoffs each of the last 5 years, including a Stanley Cup final appearance, and we're trying to figure out what's wrong with them.
Yeah, the only thing really, truly wrong with them is that they can't finish when it comes to the finals. And even that, they were in Game 7. It was as close as you can get without actually winning.
It wasn't that close.
Oh, come on, man. I mean, I love breaking Luongo's balls and everything like that, but truth be told, it was pretty close. It was a Game 7. It wasn't...
Yeah, but that Game 7 was never...
The game was out of control, but you talk about success of a franchise over the course of time. I would be hard-pressed to come up with a team that has, over the last half decade, been as successful as the Vancouver Canucks. They're about as good as you can do in the NHL over any sustained period of time. And all people ever want to ask is, what's wrong with them?
San Jose Sharks.
Well, exactly. There's nothing wrong with the San Jose Sharks either. What's wrong with them? It's very hard to win a Stanley Cup. That's what's wrong. The playoffs are designed to be a grueling test. And damn near every year, because we let half of our teams in as opposed to most other sports, somebody comes out of the closet and wins. It's very, very difficult to win a Stanley Cup.
Sure.
Yeah, it's tough to have perspective when your team is never anywhere close to the playoffs, I guess, eh?
Well, that's just it. I mean, we sit here as Oilers fans and Habs fans all excited about the future and talking about everything that's right. Meanwhile, Vancouver's been dominating for 10 years, and we're talking about what's wrong with them.
Well, it's because they can't get it done, and that's the problem.
As opposed to who, though?
As opposed to all the other teams that have gotten it done.
Well, there's only been one every year, so there's 29 teams that are complete disasters every year? I don't think so.
Well, it's less in the fact that, like, oh, they can't get it done, but it's more the fact that every year there is
one winner,
one extra person or someone that's coming out going like, oh, hey, you know what, man? This year might be the year for Vancouver. And it's...
But every year they've come pretty close to those fans saying that being right.
Yeah, I think it's funny that we talk about how...
How many President's Trophies they had?
A lot of people, anyway, speak to how consistently strong the New York Rangers are. And, you know, they're a great organization, their ability to draw in talent, their ability to do this, that, and the other. They haven't been a lick more successful than the Vancouver Canucks. Not even close, actually.
I've been saying the same thing with New York. There's something wrong with New York. I don't think their scoring is as good as it needs to be, and I don't think it's still there even with Rick Nash on the team. I think they still have issues with that.
We're only 10 games in. It's a shortened season, yes, but we're only 10 games in. Nash has got to find, you know, they've got to get used to playing with each other and stuff like that. That'll come.
Yeah, but they had that issue last year. Just adding Rick Nash to that fold is not going to fix it.
Like, to be fair, they've had that issue since they signed Theo Fleury and Eric Lindros as free agents. This is just what the New York Rangers do. Well, they hire a lot of big names, and some of them click.
Yeah, and it's just like, regardless of how many regime changes you want to throw into the fold, the Canadiens' problem always really kind of seems to be the same thing. They're always a little bit too small, and...
Not anymore.
Well, no, they have a couple bigger guys now, but they're not...
performing.
Their defense has been lacking in the past. This year, hey, man, Markov being back is probably the greatest thing that could happen to that team. And if that guy goes down with a knee injury, I feel like he's the pin that's holding it all together right now. Like that pin in his knee or whatever.
It's always that, though.
Yeah, and if Markov goes down right now, that's
yeah, if Markov goes down, the Canadiens are screwed. If Price goes down, the Canadiens are screwed. If Emelin stops body checking 65 people a game, the Canadiens are probably screwed. If Luongo gets injured, well, Schneider's doing a little tap dance.
The Canucks are still okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you just got to let it go or let it happen. We'll see what happens. But I mean, so far Markov is playing like Markov before he ever had any problems. I think the time off, like the lockout, and his playing a few games in Russia and taking his time to come back to the Habs really did a lot of good for him, and the proof is in the pudding, man. He got an assist on the goal earlier. You know, he's doing all right.
And that's great for the Canadiens, but in terms of Vancouver, it's always they should be better than what they end up doing every year.
Yeah, they should win.
I mean, that's an interesting perspective, but
they should be better than the finishes that they have had.
President's Trophy.
It has come down to stupid little errors. Like, honestly, like, the dumbest things that you could possibly imagine have been the downfall of the Vancouver Canucks. Like, team discipline and just general lack of hockey sense at
being escorted by their opponent
at key times.
Well, I think what you're talking about isn't necessarily a change in personnel. I think what you're talking about is firing a Lanvinio. I mean, if you talk about making mental errors at critical times, and you talk about not being able to make the big play or losing focus, I don't think that there are a list of players in the league you can go hire to bring in or trade for that are going to fix an issue like that. I think that is the message coming out of the coach's room more so than anything else. Is it not?
And if that ends up being the problem, as we've been trying to figure out here with Vancouver, then that's the problem. I've said it's not goaltending, despite the fact that some people within the organization have maybe let it kind of be known that possibly that's what they think it was, or whatever fans or whatever analysts want to say about the goaltending situation in Vancouver. It's not the goaltending. That's never really been the issue. It's been a team as a whole issue. Something isn't right when they're on the ice. If you look at how they have lost in the playoffs the last couple years, it has not been a goaltending issue. The entire team was completely outplayed. They were outcoached by the LA Kings last year. The year before, they were dominated in key situations by the Boston Bruins. They just weren't as good. The games that they did win, they were lucky as hell to win those games. Year before, same thing with Chicago. They lost complete focus against the Blackhawks. Dustin Byfuglien alone won that series for the Chicago Blackhawks. Every single guy on the ice didn't care about their role. They were missing defensive assignments. They weren't covering Jonathan Toews in the slot. They weren't covering Patrick Kane on the wing. They were letting the superstars of the Chicago Blackhawks walk right around them because they were more concerned with Dustin Byfuglien standing in the corner. Like, that's not an issue with Luongo and Nets.
He's right. It's coaching.
Anybody. If it's Alain Vigneault, fine. It's Alain Vigneault. But there is a problem in Vancouver, despite whatever success they want to have. There's a major problem there because they should be better than that. There's no reason that the team should be winning the division 10 years in a row, winning however many President's Trophies that they've done, and then when it comes down to the gruelingness and just the epic battle that it becomes into the playoffs, to just die out like they have the last couple of years, yeah, they made it to the Stanley Cup Final. Other than that, they've done nothing. There's a serious problem over there.
Well, I mean, other than that, the only thing they could do is win the Stanley Cup. I mean, yeah, it probably comes down to coaching because you pretty much eliminated every other possibility. And, I mean, the playoffs are a completely new season. You know, whatever happens in the 82 games coming up to that, as long as you get into the playoffs, after that, all bets are off. And, I mean, every single team that makes it into the playoffs has the intent of winning the Stanley Cup. And so maybe it's just a lack of resolve on their part as a team and not just the coaching or not one thing or another. You're right. It's not necessarily just goaltending because Luongo has done well for them. I bite my tongue to say that because I love complaining about Luongo. But when it comes down to it, he is a great goaltender. Fine. But really, I mean, I don't know if it's a fundamental problem with the team itself or if it's just that all the other teams show up to play just as much and just as hard. You know, I mean, you can't really... You're basically writing off all the other teams by putting in, you know, saying, yeah, well, you know, they finished so great and then they just don't do anything in the playoffs. But there are a lot of other teams that show up and play their asses off to beat them.
Yeah, and that's fine. But what I'm saying here is those other teams have no business most of the time beating the Vancouver Canucks. As someone who hates the Canucks, I despise them. I cannot stand them just because of my loyalty to the Oilers. I watch a lot of Canucks games, more than I would want, but I watch a lot of their hockey. On a night-in, night-out basis, they are usually the better team on the ice. But for some reason, when it comes down to the moment where they need to be that better team, every single guy on the ice doesn't get it done. Whatever that problem is, that's how come you can say there is a problem there. Because they should be better than almost every other team in that conference. They have proved it multiple times. But they just can't do it when it matters. They are the new San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I do. I don't think that it's quite as bad as the San Jose Sharks because I feel like they have had at least a chance to take a deep run into the playoffs. And, I mean, we hear it a lot. There's a lot of guys who've started this season on a streak, on a bad streak, on a hot streak, whatever. And you hear these guys trying to break slumps right now. And what do they say? You don't worry about not scoring. You worry when the scoring chances stop coming. And for me right now, if I'm the Vancouver Canucks in the grand scheme of things, I keep getting the puck in front of the net. I'm not worried about whether or not it's going in. We keep getting there. We keep putting out teams that are winning or in contention for President's Trophies. We keep winning divisions, and we keep a guy like Roberto Luongo or like Corey Schneider between the pipes, and we'll be okay. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that whole core will just age together, like Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, and they'll be, you know, sort of dwindling off into the distance before we know it. For me, I have a hard time hitting the panic button on a team that has had that kind of success. You have to feel like they're that one key veteran trade at the deadline away that many teams are, or a coaching change, or maybe just giving Schneider the reins. You can't feel like a team that's 95% there needs to be 30% changed. They only need to be 5% changed. And that's, you know, just the way I see it. I don't think we're going to reach a consensus on this one. But that being said, we are closing in on the halfway point of Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com. I'm asking Adam currently to take a look at some of the live scores as we are going to do an update here. And looks like he's got them up. Adam, what do you got for us tonight on the docket?
I don't get any music this time. Jeez, all right.
Well, you want me to sing you in? Tell you the scores.
Oh, there it is. All right, attaboy, James. All right, so currently we got a lot of games at the second intermission. Montreal is up over Buffalo 3-2 with goals for the Habs coming from Thomas Plekanec, Brendan Gallagher, and P.K. Subban on the power play. Steve Ott and Tyler Ennis have scored for the Sabres. At the second intermission, Jersey is up 2-1 over Tampa Bay with Jersey goals coming from Adam Henrique and Ilya Kovalchuk, and Nate Thompson as the lone marker for the Lightning. The Rangers are up 3-1 over the Islanders with goals from KT Miller, Marian Gaborik, and JT Miller again, and John Tavares is the lone marker for the Islanders. Philly is up over Florida 2-1, goals from Jacob Voracek and Matt Reed from Philly, and Jack Skille from Florida. Pittsburgh is up 5-1 over Washington, second intermission. Ribeiro did get that goal for Washington, so there's one. Goals from Malkin, Neal, Dupuis, Sidney Crosby, and Matt Cook. 2-2, Calgary is tied up over the Columbus Blue Jackets with goals from Roman Zvanka and Michael Backlund and Matt Calvert and Mark Letestu for the Blue Jackets. The Sens are up 1-0 over Carolina. Goal from Erik Karlsson, big surprise. Notched up at 0 at the end of the first period, Toronto over Winnipeg. The Red Wings are leading the Blues 2-0 with goals from Dan Cleary and Jacob Kindle. Nashville's up 1-0 over LA at the end of the first with a goal from Gabriel Bourque. Vancouver's up 2-0. Daniel Sedin has scored and Chris Higgins has scored with Corey Schneider in net. And Phoenix and Chicago is yet to start. And we're going to be taking a good look at the beginning of that game to see if anything happens with Hossa and Rafi Torres or pretty much every member of the Blackhawks piling up and beating him down.
One deep breath, put your face off the desk. There's a lot of action in the National Hockey League tonight.
Indeed.
Yes.
James fell asleep, I think.
And I'm here.
Somebody had to work the slap shot sound.
That's when Adam talks, he goes on and on and
lots to talk about, man.
All right, so we are looking at the return of Rafi Torres to the scene of the crime, playing against the Chicago Blackhawks tonight. I don't think it's going to be Hossa who takes the run at him, although it would be sweet.
Pretty sweet.
We talked about it last week a little bit, or maybe it was the week before.
Last week.
You guys okay with the fact that there is most likely some retribution coming? You guys all right with the code?
Yes, absolutely. I don't think it should be anything overly violent or horrible, but Rafi Torres does need to be reminded that he's a douchebag and somebody's got to crack him one.
James, all right with the sweet justice?
Yeah, I'm sure some. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out who on the Blackhawks team would be the guy to go do it. I know we threw out some.
Diamond Taves.
It's gonna be Mayers, right? Mayers is a pretty good size matchup, is he not?
Did they call a goon up from the Wolves?
No,
that's too bad.
I was trying to see if I get the starting lineup for tonight, but I can't find it anywhere as to who's going to be on the ice. I'm okay with somebody trying to go punch him in the face, but that's also because I really think somebody needs to punch Rafi Torres in the face.
A bunch of times.
Yeah, you know. Why the hell not? Dude was a total jerk in what he did and deserves to be pounded on for it. So, why not?
I think the only really main concern here is making sure that this justice is delivered in a respectful way.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that the guy's squared up. You got to make sure he's ready to go. You don't take a run at his head when he's not looking. You know, you don't go eye for an eye on this
it's
one.
It's got to be done right.
You let the hockey gods do justice as they will. You square up to him. You send a guy like a Brian Bickle or a Jamal Mayers out there and let business take care of itself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you don't want to have some guy taking a two-hander swing at his head, you know, with his stick. That would just be pathetic.
Or as they call it in the NHL, giving him the Rafi Torres treatment.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The last thing you want to do is stoop to his level. You don't want to give him the business. You got to just sort of – someone's got to fight him, and Torres has to square up and face the guy. You can't have him turn tail and run off, whatever like that. He knows he did wrong. He's got to take his licks. You know, if he wins the fight, that sucks. But I think it's got to be just
that's
a good old-fashioned
fight.
Yeah,
you give him his chance.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I think everybody here would be familiar with the incident in the Tampa Bay game, Tampa Bay Philly yesterday, with the punches still being thrown after an opponent is down on one knee. I don't think I have to ask you guys where you stand on that. Obviously, whether he was throwing the punches blindly or whether he was intending to throw it, clearly too late. But what I'm interested in is LeCavalier's reaction after he goes out, gets in a fight almost immediately off the next draw, and intentionally and purposefully throws that extra punch while the guy's laying down on the ice as if to prove a point. How do you guys feel about LeCavalier doing that?
I think that's a bit of a step down for LeCavalier. I don't, you know, the guy's always been a leader.
Yeah.
He's been a stand-up hockey player. He's a big guy, too. Like, I mean, I stumbled across him one day. He had rented out the ice just before one of my Wednesday hockey games this summer. The guy's a beast. I get why he did it, I guess. You know, you want to do something lowball to my guys, then I'm going to do it back. But it's just, he doesn't seem to be the right person to do that. It's not really leading by example. It's not really...
Interesting.
I don't know.
It sort of rubs you the wrong way?
Kind of, yeah. I get it. I just don't like it.
James, how do you feel about it?
I didn't see anything that you're talking about, so I have no idea what this is all about.
The ill-prepared award goes to?
As I said, I don't watch anything from the East.
All right. Well, that's fair.
And
I'll give you my 2 cents then.
From the way that you described it, it seems like the kind of thing, like, I know Adam's saying that LeCavalier is not the kind of guy that would go and do that, but from the leader role of that team, I feel like if he was going to go punch a dude like that, then he must have gotten the sense on the bench that that's what the team needed. Whether it's right or wrong, if that's what the team needed at the time, then good on him for doing it.
Damn.
I was kind of hoping you both disagree with me, because I was honestly kind of hoping that, James, you had seen the video, and I didn't think that you would agree with me. Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think that as much as it is against the code to punch a guy when he's down, and maybe, okay, I'm not all for the eye for an eye on the Rafi Torres situation, you know, going for the headshot and all that jazz. I really liked what Vincent LeCavalier did. And actually, it doesn't rub me the wrong way at all. It is quite the opposite. It makes me feel good for a reason I can't quite explain. When I saw it happen on SportsCenter this morning, I actually put down my coffee and wanted to stand up in my living room and give LeCavalier a standing ovation because it's so far out of his character. Because he's not a scrapper. He's not the kind of guy who's going to go and just mix it up for no reason. He's thrown punches a few times in his NHL career, mostly just by necessity. But this was a situation where he felt like one of his guys was down on the ice and took an unnecessary shot. And he went out there, and the way he threw that punch, I forget who the Philadelphia Flyers player was, but he had him down on the ice. The referees, both the linesmen, both came in from either side. LeCavalier went back around behind one of the other linesmen and threw a downward sweeping uppercut into the guy as he lay there on the ice. And I honestly felt to myself, F and A. Give it to him. Give it to him. He deserves it. And it's, you know, maybe it's not necessarily the appropriate commentator in me. Maybe as someone who plays the game and has a son on the way, I would sit down and sort of look at that situation differently with a moment to react. But as I saw the situation unfold, something deep inside my gut went, yeah, that's right, give it to him. Pound him. He deserves it. Prove that point to protect your teammate.
What, James?
Was it the same guy?
No, it wasn't, and that's the point.
That guy was still in the box.
Yeah, it was almost immediately after the original hit, or after the original tilt. And I believe that guy was...
I'd be like, hell yeah, go kick his ass.
Well, that's exactly it. It sparked something inside of me. If I was a member of that Lightning team, I'm buying Vincent LeCavalier a steak today.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, you know,
judge that is what the team needed at the time, go for it.
Well, that's it, and it's because LeCavalier doesn't often make those calls that you have to assume if he does it, he probably has a good reason, and he probably means it.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I didn't like it, but I get it. I mean, you know, it's out of character for him, so he must have been right pissed about the whole situation. It just, again, it's the hitting the guy after he's down. Just because the first guy did it, that was stupid, and it just seems, I don't know, it just seems almost cheap for him to do it. But again, like I said, I get it, you know, for his team, do it, and, you know, and again, the team should be stoked about it, I guess, but I still... I'm not crazy about it.
All right.
Maybe that's just because I'm a goalie, though.
Yeah, you have a whole different code. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, honest to God, if I see... there have been a few times where I've almost come out of my crease. Like, that guy, time that guy hacked you, I was just about to come out of my crease and try to kill the guy myself because I don't like seeing stuff like that at all, especially at the level of hockey in which we play, which is really... You know, yeah, we play for a championship, fine, but it's just for fun. We're out there, you know, we've got jobs to go to the next morning, and so, you know, the cheap stuff pisses me off big time. But at that level, it just seems, I don't know. Anyhow, goalie, that's all.
Interesting. All right, another issue we're not going to solve, but was an awful lot of fun to talk about. So,
next.
You okay there, James?
Yeah, I said, what's next?
Oh, I thought you were doing a Sega promo. Got a little choppy there. All right, so we're going to talk about Jaromir Jagr. We're going to talk about the guy who climbed his way into the top 10 all-time goal-scoring list with an overtime winner last night against, James, your Edmonton Oilers. 668 goals in Jaromir Jagr's career, tying him for 10th all-time with the best left winger to ever play, in my opinion, Lucky Luke Robitaille. The question now comes up on the case of Jaromir Jagr. Now that he's into these, he's climbing, he's nearing the end of his career, top 10 in a lot of different things. Where do we have him on the all-time list? Because this is a player who, in my opinion, more so than anyone else, when I hear these lists being tossed about, I often hear him in the mid-20s, and I often hear him in the top 5 of people's lists. He seems to be a lightning rod for debate over where Jaromir Jagr belongs in the all-time greats list. James, how do you see it breaking down?
Well, just want to say, as in Jaromir Jagr fashion, had to do it in style in overtime. So good on him on that one. 17th career overtime goal, by the way, most of any player ever in the NHL.
That's surprising.
That is awesome, isn't it? What a great number to have.
Yeah, so good on him for doing that.
To be fair, Eberle's only been around for a year. We know how that kid loves the clutch, so we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah. In terms of where do I put him all time, I am going to place him, because I don't necessarily have a list of all-time players ever sort of thing, but I'm going to put him as my number two European-born player.
Trailing Nicholas Lidstrom, I assume?
No.
Peter Forsberg?
Yes.
All right, then.
I don't think any other player was as dominant as, you know, obviously taking Wayne Gretzky aside, but Wayne Gretzky was dominant in his era in a completely different way that Peter Forsberg was in his.
Yeah, that's very true.
When Peter Forsberg was dominant, it was incredible to watch. And I still think he is one of the best players to have ever played in the NHL.
Interesting. I don't have him sniffing my top 10. I've got Forsberg well outside, and not because of talent and not because of peak, but because I think, and I don't think, obviously, actually hearing your justification, it is literally because I put durability as a more important factor than you, I think. I think I've weighed the amount of time and the totality of his career with a little more weight than you. When you talk about peak, I can't argue with you. When Peter Forsberg wants to skate around you, he's going to skate around you.
Yeah, he just has to want to.
Yeah, and that's and have, you know, more than one good foot at the moment.
Yeah. He needs 6 inches of space and the want to do it. That's really what he needs.
Absolutely. He'll and a killer beard.
Yeah. He'll MacGyver that puck somewhere.
So you've got Jaromir Jagr as your number two European player of all time.
Yeah.
Where does that put him on your all-time list? I guess the question is, how many North Americans are near the top of your list?
I don't really know. I don't have a list.
Neither do I. Don't worry about that.
I don't really...
Gut it out. What does your gut say? Where does he land?
Top 5, top 10, top 1,000.
He's definitely in the top 10, but I don't think I'd put him in my top... Because I don't... When it comes to the top players for me of all time, I'm not necessarily looking at the numbers or this. It's just if I had a guy on my team and I was picking like a top line, he's not on my top line.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Well, so in your opinion, not the best right winger to ever play the game?
No.
Interesting. All right. Fair enough. Adam, where you put him? We'll get back and chew over some of these points once we've all got our opinions out there, I'm sure.
I'd probably put him in my top 6.
Because your two top lines.
You wouldn't put him in your top 5, but you would put him in your top 6. I think, James, well, I think we can confidently place him at number 6.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not 100% sure because I'm trying to debate as to whether or not I want my top 9 to actually involve a checking line. Or if I just want to go with, you know.
No, we're talking, if you could pick one guy and 8 people went before you, is Jagr your next pick?
I don't know.
Ah, you're terrible. You had 24 hours to prepare for this.
24 hours?
12.
I got the list this morning.
12?
8.
Yeah.
I sent that out at 8 o'clock this morning.
Actually, that's true because the deadline was like, yeah. It
always
o'clock.
Is.
Anyhow. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm not the student of hockey that you guys are. I mean, when I'm thinking of top 5, top 10 lists and stuff, I'm thinking of excitement to watch. You know, yeah, guys like Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe, incredible hockey players, but I never really got to see them play in real life. You know, I never got to see them on a night-by-night basis and everything. So, I mean, for me, Jagr's up in the top 5. Like, as was a guy like Bure, just for the way they played the game. They were so exciting to see the way they'd move the puck. Just when they were on, they were on. It was awesome. So yeah, sorry, not top five, top ten.
I was going to say, I'm going to ask Adam to leave here for a moment. Parks his car in the neighbor's driveway for putting Furre in his top five.
But again, I'm talking about excitement to watch. And sorry, I meant top ten. As we spoke before, I said top ten. Anyhow, you look at a guy like, you know, not only is he the all-time leader in overtime winning goals, but he's second in game-winning goals. And that, you know, Phil Esposito's got three ahead of him, and I'm pretty sure he'll be able to eke out another three or four. So he's going to take that, too. Even now at 40 years old, the guy is still just awesome to watch play hockey. He's not as fast as he used to be, but he still has the same mind for the game. He can still set people up. He can still make those around him better. And I like watching that a lot. And I'm glad he got a haircut, too, because it's kind of annoying with the mullet that he had back in the day.
Well, but
that was his signature.
That just went out of style in the Czech Republic like 6 months ago. So you got to remember.
But, yeah, I mean, the guy's won. He's won a Hart Trophy, two Cups, 5 Art Ross Trophies, a Lester B. Pearson, the player MVP. He's been an all-star, first-team all-star 7 times. You know, like, he's an awesome hockey player. And, yes, he's in my top 10 for sure.
So, you know, what's very interesting is that I actually disagree with James and landed in a completely opposite direction of what you would think because of that. I do genuinely believe that Jaromír Jágr is the greatest right winger to ever play the game. I don't think that there's ever been anybody better. Brett Hull was very good. Jaromír Jágr was better.
But that Gordie Howe is ahead of him.
Okay, yes, actually, that is wrong. Sorry. But Gordie Howe played both wings in his career. You have to remember that as well.
Are you disqualifying him on a technicality?
No, I'm saying he's not a pure right winger.
Hmm.
I'm saying that's where you get into these wishy-washy, you know, who knows where you place a guy. Howe is above Jaromír Jágr on my list. I have got Jaromír Jágr sitting at number 10 on my list, and I actually do have a list. I've got Gretzky at 1 or at 2, Mario Lemieux at number 3, Gordie Howe at 4, Rocket Richard at 5, Marc Messier at 6, Guy Lafleur at 7, Jean Béliveau at 8, Bobby Hull at 9, Jaromír Jágr at 10, and Nick Lidstrom at 11.
That's his top 11 list.
And that's I had the 11 there because I didn't know whether I wanted Jágr or Lidstrom in my top 10. And as you can tell by the names on that list, I don't know which between the two is necessarily the greatest European-born player of all time.
Hmm.
Now, James, to be fair to your point, I also have Jágr on a different list as the number 4 most talented hockey player of all time. I think when you come down to pure talent, Mario Lemieux is number 1, Gretzky is number 2, Orr is number 3, Jágr is number 4, and Peter Forsberg is number 5. Just the way I break it down, I'm not sure that when you look at a guy, Jaromír Jágr, 1,350 games played roundabout, 1,650 career points roundabout. That's a point per game plus 300. I mean, this is incredible. You're talking about a guy who's a member of the Triple Gold Club. 62 goals, 87 assists in 1995-96. The single greatest season in the history of right wing. Nobody has ever been close. You talk about consistency over a long period of time. In 2005-2006, 10 years later, Jaromír Jágr had the greatest season in the history of the New York Rangers. 54 goals, 123 points in a season.
Sick.
You go down the list. I mean, you know, over the course of a 21-year period from 1980 to 2001, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Jaromír Jágr are the only three names in 21 years engraved on the Art Ross Trophy. And he didn't just appear among them. He won that thing 5 times over that period. I mean, you're talking about an absolutely incredible hockey player, the most productive European to ever play in the National Hockey League. And then on top of all of that, you have to consider the fact that here's a guy who played 3 seasons in Russia, missed the better half of 2 seasons due to lockout, and 1 entire season due to lockout. That's nearly 5 seasons more. if he had played those 5 full years and remained relatively healthy, it's not unreasonable at all to think that we're talking about Jaromir Jagr in the top 3 goals, points, and assists of all time in the National Hockey League. Here's a guy who I think is, believe it or not, for all the ratings that he's got, underrated. You're talking about a guy who has 937 career penalty minutes, nearly 1,000 penalty minutes to go with these numbers. This is a very complete hockey player, the sweetest mullet in the history of the game, and the second best anagram in hockey. The guy's name can be rearranged to spell Mario Jr. That's awesome. And for the record, the first best anagram in the history of hockey names, Ty Domi, can be rearranged to spell me idiot.
Pretty good.
All right, that's my spiel on Jaromir Jagr. Debate.
I don't think there is. I mean, you made a great case for the guy, too. It's true. Had he had those extra 5 seasons, he would have been that much higher. Because those 5 seasons came a while ago when he wasn't 40.
Oh, yeah. 94? 2004?
And yeah, and like the guy, like I said, just amazing to watch play hockey. Mullet flying majestically behind him and pucks flying past goalies. I mean, just...
Oh, yeah. 5 o'clock awesome. Shadow and full bloom. The gold chain coming out. The side jersey tuck. This guy was 1991 hockey.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
So, James, let's talk a little bit about... You talk about overall versus talent. You can have your lines and things like that. Is Jagr on your second line?
Yeah, well, he's
well, that's what I'm... Well,
maybe not.
I'm having a hard time...
You might have a checking line.
In kind of like a personal debate here, because like whenever the talk of like all-time teams come up, like, Kairos, you and I did that 1 6.5-hour test episode in your basement that one time.
Still more radio than we've done in the year since.
Yeah, exactly, and we kind of went over a hypothetical all-time team sort of thing, and that's where I made it known, if I'm picking one guy as my number one center of any player in the history of the NHL, I'm picking Jonathan Toews. I'm not necessarily saying he's the greatest player in the world, but he's my number one center.
That's quite interesting. And I like that approach. I remember having that conversation with you. And I don't subscribe to that approach. I think when I'm making my all-time, I'm just like pure video game fantasy roster. Like if there was fantasy hockey in the 1950s, who am I taking kind of thing.
But see,
because if I was to take your approach, Ron Francis, Bob Gainey, a lot of different names would appear on my top 10 list, I can tell you that.
See, that's why my top 10 list is a very bizarre list, because there's guys on there that probably wouldn't be on anybody else's top 10.
It's nice of you to put me on there, James, but we've only played a couple seasons together in the Men With No Name.
It was Jamal Myers.
But, like, you asked me, would I put Jaromir Jagr as my top right winger? I don't think I would, because personally, myself, the guy that I would pick above Jagr, this is going to be a weird-ass selection that I don't think either of you would put there.
If it's also Jonathan Toews, I'm coming to your house.
Mark Recchi.
Mark Recchi? Really? Dr. Yeah. Mark Recchi?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. You're talking about a guy who once held the NHL Ironman streak at 448 games, according to a project I did for my French class in 7th grade.
1,533 points for Mark Recchi.
And a doctorate from an internet school.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? 577 goals. I think he's a hell of a hockey player. Even at the in the twilight of his career, helped Carolina win a Stanley Cup. Helped Boston win a Stanley Cup.
Consummate winner. I like your style.
But when nobody else picked this guy for their team, he proved on more than one occasion at the end of his career, when everybody thought he was done, that he had more than enough left in the tank. Winning Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh, in Carolina and in Boston. Dude knows how to get it done. I'd put Mark Recchi as my right winger before Jágr.
Yeah, I like Mark Recchi a lot, but before Jágr, you're crazy.
Yeah.
See, the roots of your beard have climbed up into your brain.
When I'm looking at how I want my team built, that if I'm picking my ultimate team, I'm building it my way. So
you're talking about players in their prime, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're taking Mark Recchi at his best on that team.
A good portion of his career.
over Jaromir Jágr at his best on that team.
Yeah, because I think Recchi would probably fit in better into the style and the lineup of my team.
All right, Coach. Oh, just to put a little bit of an update here. So the fight did go down. Rafi Torres and Jamal Myers.
Oh, I totally called it.
Yeah, you did. You get 10.
I mean,
pound
for pound, they square up the best.
Yeah.
Who won?
That I can't tell. I wasn't actually watching. I'm just tracking through the NHL.com game center.
There you go. 2 minutes, 35 seconds into the game.
Good. Probably his first shift.
Yeah, he had no ice time.
Probably.
That's awesome.
That's
no, but I mean, listen, when we're talking about Jágr, I feel as if this is a guy who, maybe because of the time he spent in Europe, maybe because he was taken for granted, I'm not sure, but I don't think people really respect how talented a player he was. Maybe it's because he came out alongside Mario. Maybe he has Marc Messier syndrome, where no matter how good he was able to get to, he was forced to live with that connotation of the way he started his career as being second fiddle.
But, my God, did he ever come back? Both of them, you know, came back and said, hey, yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. Messier did manage to get his respect. He had to really fight for it, but he did outgrow that, and now it's seen as one of the greatest leaders in the history of the game.
Yep.
Jágr, despite being captain of the New York Rangers, despite, you know, putting up all these crazy statistical seasons, never really did get that respect. And I can't help but wonder why. Because when you watch highlight reels, I can't say that there's ever been a player, maybe Peter Forsberg, who was as dangerous one-on-one, who could beat you one-on-one as a defenseman in open ice more effectively than Jaromir Jágr. You talk about a powerful stride, the speed, the hands, the finish, the willingness to drive a shoulder into your chest. I don't know. I mean, I know for a fact there's never been a European player more complete. I don't know that I've seen a player in the league in my generation of watching hockey, late 80s on, that has been more complete. I mean, Ron Francis was very good. Better on the defensive side of the puck, for sure. Definitely not the offensive upside.
Hal Gill,
of course.
Jonathan Taves.
Jonathan Taves is a very complete hockey player, and that actually is a fair point. Jonathan Taves, absolutely one of those guys.
But hasn't been around long enough to...
Well, he's got a cup.
Yeah, he's got a cup, but he doesn't...
A cup counts for 5 years.
Okay.
A Stanley Cup year counts for 5 normal years. Unless you're in Vancouver, in which case it takes 10 normal years to count for a Stanley Cup year.
Yeah. For as to why he never got out of Mario's shadow, kind of like the whole Messier-Gretzky thing.
Well, he was freaking Mario Lemieux.
Mario kept coming back?
Well, no, not just that. Like, you can say he's freaking Mario Lemieux, but it's freaking Wayne Gretzky at the same time. Mm. Messier did it twice without Gretzky.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Two different teams.
But Messier also had teams around him on two different occasions that were Stanley Cup caliber. I can't say that Jágr's had that without Lemieux. He's never been surrounded by that kind of talent. I know that Messier obviously had to deliver still. But he had some talent around him. I mean, he had the Oilers, and then when he was with the Rangers, he essentially had the Oilers again. So there was that. And Jágr's never had that kind of team. The closest he's come was probably last year in Philly. And he's not now what Messier was in 94. There's no confusing those two points of their career. No. Jágr is an old veteran who can help some people out right now. Messier was still a dominant player at that point.
Yes. You're correct, sir.
So I understand where you're justifying the perception coming from. I just don't think that necessarily it's that fair.
No, well, I think that probably has a big part to do with it, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I don't know, like, even though, yeah, he was captain at one point, it still never seemed like it was ever going to be the Jaromir Jágr show. Because in Pittsburgh, even after Mario left and it was Jágr's team, it was still almost kind of, in theory, Mario's team. He just couldn't be there anymore, sort of thing. So he never probably got the fair shot.
Yeah, all he did was win a scoring title.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. Like, if that's not good enough, that's just you're a victim. That's the ultimate victim of circumstance. Like, oh, all right, yeah, you want an Art Ross. That's cute. But, you know, Mario had 199 points.
I think he also took a lot of flack for his transition to Washington.
Yeah. Well, that was a terrible transition. Those years in Washington were not good.
And I think that hurt him. His time in Washington definitely didn't make any kind of case for himself.
Maybe not, but I just don't think you can discount a guy's production. When a guy does it, they always, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Jágr's got a truckload of pudding.
Oh, yeah. Hey, don't get me wrong. Number two on my European chart. He'd probably make the team, depending on how I want to formulate this team. Might be a power play specialist that I bury on the fourth line. Who knows? But he's on my team. I just got to find a spot for him.
Can I ask you where Nick Lidstrom falls on your all-time European list?
He's probably number three.
I'm just wondering if you had him above Solani or guys like that. I'm just wondering how heavily you weighted the offense.
Solani's in my top five. Lidstrom, I'm gonna peg him in at number three right now. Solani, number four. I don't even really know who number five on my list is. Probably Jari Kurri.
Ooh, nice. Yep.
I'd probably throw Kurri up in there as my number five.
You can't go wrong with a 1,000-point score.
No, you can't. But see, again, like, when you go back to my team, I would make choices for my team that probably no one else would.
Well, I think Taves at starting center is your prime example.
Well, yeah, I'd also make sure that Glenn Anderson is on my team.
I wish I had some crickets here.
But see, I'm one of the only guys that would do that. But I have grown up an Oiler fan, and I have watched a lot of Oiler hockey, specifically old Oilers 80s playoff hockey and the Rangers in 94 with Glenn Anderson on that team. Dude, when it's down to it in the playoffs, he's your guy.
Yeah, I do like that call. And, I mean, listen, you're talking to a guy who has been accused on many occasions of playing that exact same card in picking Patrick Waugh as my number one all-time goaltender. I personally don't even feel as if emotion came into that play because I think Waugh was the most dominant goaltender to ever play the game. But I understand the connotation that comes with picking the guys you grew up watching.
Yeah, I'm right there with Adam in the sense of I can only necessarily pick the guys that I have seen. I didn't see Rocket Richard. I didn't see a lot of these guys from the days of old play. I'm sure they were really great hockey players, but I don't have the proof with my own eyes to back that up, which is kind of contradictory to my backup goalie, where I have Terry Sawchuk in there. Never seen the guy play, but the way that my dad talks about him, he's got to be good.
From what I'm told, the sweetest glove in the history of hockey.
Exactly. And then, you know, sitting
you up, and then Terry Sawchuk.
And then, you know, sitting up and waiting to see if Marty Brodeur, because he'd be my starter, or Sawchuk can't perform,
I'd have Glenn Hall.
I like that call. I do. I would, and again, we've had this debate on air many times, but I can't justify not taking the guy with the three Conn Smythes. I just, yeah. as you say with the Vancouver Canucks, it doesn't mean anything regular season, so you can take all those numbers that Brodeur's got and throw them out the door and say that, okay, they went cup for cup, one guy was deemed to be more valuable to his team more often than the other guy.
Yeah, that's,
so, I mean, that's my hometown bias. That's me growing up with a St. Patrick poster on my wall.
That's not a hometown bias at all. That is the logical train of thought.
Oh, I am very rarely accused of that.
Off the crossbar, fact.
Yeah, mark that one down as a fact.
But I would still take Brodeur over Patrick Waugh.
Well, that's okay. You can have Brodeur.
One of my top three.
He's going to have to stop Gretzky since you don't have him starting at center in your team.
No, I don't.
You still have Taves on that one?
He does. We just talked about that.
My starting center for any team ever. If I can pick any guy ever, Jonathan Taves. I've already said that. I'll keep saying that.
All right, then. What else have we got? We're going to get to...
goalies.
Let's get to a reader email, shall we?
Sure. Why not?
All right.
Who'd your starting left winger be, by the way? If you're making a team, starting left winger.
I got you ready.
Bobby Hull.
Bobby Hull?
Bobby Hull. I like a guy with a shot.
Nice.
What she said.
And if I'm going second line, I will take Lucky Luke Robitaille because I do not believe you can argue, again, truckload of pudding. Of all the left wingers who have ever put on the skates, that guy went home with the most points.
That's a pretty good one. That is a pretty good one. I will say that.
Who have you got?
My starting left winger would probably be Lucky Luke. My second line left winger, not 100% sure right now, but I feel in the top of my head the name that keeps jumping out to me.
Is that the end of this sentence, which I will finish soon when I am done talking?
Gary Roberts.
Oh, I like that too. He's going to make you eat wheatgrass, you know that.
Yeah, but man.
Get to this listener email.
All right, listener email.
All right. We've got an email from Ryan in Buffalo. Is Craig Anderson from Park Ridge, Illinois, good enough to take over the number one spot for the U.S. Olympic team?
Luger.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know my starting goaltender's hometown trivia.
All right, here's what we'll do, John James.
Can you name me the option?
I'm going to go through. Adam's got them.
Okay.
Awesome.
So right now, worth mentioning, Craig Anderson, Jonathan Quick from Milford, Connecticut, Jimmy Howard from Syracuse, New York, Mr. Ryan Miller from East Lansing, Michigan, Corey Schneider from Marblehead, Massachusetts, and...
Tim Thomas from A Cave in the Ground.
Yeah, no. So those are your choices right now, really.
All right. Cool.
So who you got?
The first three that you mentioned.
Anderson, Quick, and Howard?
Yeah.
You're taking Howard over Schneider and Miller?
Yep.
Fair enough.
Howard would be my third. Anderson would be my backup. Quick would be my starter.
I like that. I like that. Adam?
I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Anderson this year. If this trend continues. Because right now, Quick isn't overly quick. He's not, like, fast. I'd probably switch that and put Anderson as a starter. If we're talking right now, Anderson as a starter, Quick as the next in line. And then probably Schneider as the third. Ryan Miller, I still just, I don't know.
We are just back to disagreeing all over the map on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that's it.
I like a good disagreement.
Anderson, Quick, and Schneider.
Well, I'm gonna go with Jonathan Quick to start. I think he's got to be your number one. I'm actually on the same page with James on that one. I don't think you can argue with what he was able to accomplish last year.
But I want to argue.
What's that?
I want to argue, so give me a reason to.
Okay. My backup goaltender is Ryan Miller.
Okay, now you're just being stupid.
Because he was clearly the best goaltender at the last Olympics.
Oh, but
got his team to within a crossbar ding of a gold medal. And I will take a guy in a big game like that with a lot of proven experience. I think it takes a lot of gonads to play on the international level when it's winner-take-all, one game or nothing. And I like a guy who's been there before.
Oh.
So I'll take him as my backup, and I'll have Craig Anderson sitting in the box just because I like what he's done lately, but at the same time,
doesn't have the pedigree.
Where's your pudding? I mean, show me some playoff series wins. Show me the ability to show up and steal the big game, and then we can talk. I like the numbers, I really do. But for now, you can take a seat in the press box. You've earned a chance to prove it, but until it's actually been proven, I'll take the guy that's been there before, which is why I've got a Stanley Cup champion as my starter, and I've got the guy who damn near won the gold medal by himself at the last Olympics as my backup.
I want to change mine.
Two?
I'm going to drop Jimmy Howard.
Duh.
Smart.
I don't know the guy's name who I want to put as my third, though.
This is awesome.
I know. I want the guy who is starting for the World Junior team as my...
Oh, Jake Gibson. Yeah, Gibson.
John Gibson.
Or John Gibson, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I want him as my third watching because that's going to be his team one day.
Sure, but we've heard that before from young American goaltenders.
Yeah, but...
Rick DiPietro was going to dominate the league for 15 years. Goaltenders in particular, I think you have to just wait until they've proven it a little bit. It's great to see a kid perform well at the World Junior.
That's why he's my third, because it would be a better experience for him than for Jimmy Howard.
And realistically, your third isn't going to start. Your third's not going to see any ice time unless something horrible happens to your one, and then your two sucks too. I mean...
Yeah, but again, and I guess maybe I'm not necessarily thinking to go be surprised for a guy who's got a ridiculously intricate top 10, but I'm not thinking on the same complexity level as James. I'm not grooming a goaltender for the future when I pick this team. I'm bringing the three goalies.
You need someone who can play for you.
I'm bringing the three goalies I want to play. And on that basis, like I said, I'll take the Stanley Cup champion to start. I'll take the guy who almost won the gold by himself to back him up. And I'll take the guy with the best goals against and save percentage as my third.
That's a good formula.
Yeah. I still disagree.
Okay, well, we'll agree to disagree, but you're wrong. So, now let's turn the table and see for the other probable winners of gold in Sochi. How would we do for Canada?
I thought we were going to talk Sweden.
Oh.
Yeah, no. I was just going to say, what, we're doing Sweden now? I was...
all right, well, Canada, I think, will draw some debate. And I know for a fact I'm going to take some flack from you two guys for some of my picks. So let's start with the goaltender among us on this one. Adam, who you got?
I think Pricey is coming into his... He's reaching his potential at the right time. If he continues as he's doing this year to just play fantastic hockey, I really think that he would be, I don't want to say the clear-cut choice, but a front runner for the starting position. Brodeur just has tons of experience on all levels of it, so he'd be a good guy to have there. And maybe... I don't know. Corey Crawford? I don't know. Fleury, if he could prove to be consistent, maybe. Elliott. I mean, there's a whole lot to choose from. I want to have Price as my starter. I want to have Brodeur there as the second or third. And, I mean, Cam Ward? This is tough. This is a tough question.
It is, because Canada right now has a lot of goaltenders who are in that prime chunk of their career. You've got your Cam Wards, you've got your Carey Prices, you've got these guys, the Marc-Andre Fleurys, but then you've also got your veterans who deserve their crack. So it becomes a really interesting debate as to how you balance that. James, who you got?
All right, you ready? This is going to be real fast. Carey Price, Roberto Luongo, and Mike Smith.
All right, I like it.
Yeah, that works.
I've got a different guy in the press box. I've got Carey Price starting, Luongo backing up. I've got Brodeur in the press box because I think in the event that you do need your third goalie, as Adam says, you're going to need it because a guy got hurt or because something has gone wrong. And in that event, I think Brodeur probably has the most professionalism to come in. He's still got that top of the game. He's still got that. If you need one game from anyone, you could probably get it from Brodeur. James, I'm interested to hear that you've got Luongo on your roster. Could you explain that to me so that I don't have to explain it?
The only time he's ever won anything is with Team Canada in front of him, so if Carey Price is going to falter, might as well go with the guy who won you gold.
Yeah, I like that.
It's kind of basically why you have Ryan Miller as your backup.
It's exactly why I have Ryan Miller as my backup. It's exactly why I have Roberto Luongo as my backup. Because I think everybody in the world is too hard on Roberto Luongo. They don't think he's messed anything up. And the last time we put him in, we came home with a gold medal. He's one of the best goaltenders in the world. He's still in his prime. He's won Olympic gold.
Yeah, that's why if, like, Carey Price, 100% my starter, I think he can more than hold his own on the international stage. He's proven that before. Granted, yeah, he was at the World Juniors.
That's my main worry about
that. World Juniors are going to be at those Olympics anyway. So, Price, definitely my starter. But if he falters not and can't get it done, might as well go with the guy who's done it before.
Yep, I really like that logic. But it does worry me to put Carey Price in the net. It does. And the only reason is because I know that he has done it before, but that was a while ago, and that was the World Juniors, and things are a little bit different now. Carey Price has been losing a lot of games for a long time since he's been in Montreal. He's been putting up wins and making a lot of saves, and he's been the backbone of this team. But on the one occasion that the team managed to make any kind of noise in the playoffs, they did it behind someone else. And I know that Carey Price, again, technically probably the best goaltender in the National Hockey League coming out of Canada, for my money right now, definitely the best Canadian goaltender in the world. But does he have it under the big stage? And it's going to be different when it's a one and done. Price has never shown the ability to win the big game by himself. And when you get into Olympic competition, especially when you're in Russia playing against the Russians, when you're playing on the big ice against the Swedes, and when you've got a young American team as vibrant and as eager for revenge as they're going to be next year, you've got to trust your goaltender imminently. I mean, right down to the very last fabric of his being. And I just wonder if you can trust a guy who has not been there before. I don't know that you can't, but I don't know that you can.
No, and I get where you're coming from. And when it was a different goalie, Halak, leading the Habs deep in the playoffs, I think Price is a different goalie. He was much less, he hadn't matured at the point where he had now. He wasn't as smooth with everything, really, in his life. I mean,
well, that's a fair point, but then we're saying that his only international experience was from even before that.
Right. Well, no, but that's the thing. It was before that, because think about it. When Price, before that, Price hadn't been in Montreal, right? He was still a kid, whatever. When Price came to Montreal, he was a kid from the Res, way out west. You know, he'd never been in a really big city. He'd never played in a place where you were instantly gone. And so he came to Montreal, and chicks threw themselves at him. He was given, you know, everything everywhere he went. He'd go out drinking, partying, having all sorts of fun because, well, you know, I've never had this before. Now everybody wants me there all the time. We're having an awesome time doing anything we want. I'm a god in this city. And I think that got to his head a lot, and that was a big part of his consistency issue problem when he came to Montreal. Now, you know, he's got his girl. He's got a steady life. He's working his ass off. You know, in the off season, he's doing his thing still and having a good time. But really just he's matured a lot as a person and as a hockey player. And I think that is going to be the major thing for him into the future playing for the Habs and at any other level or any other competitions. You know, when he was a kid, he didn't have a big contract when he played for Team Canada or anything like that. Nothing got into his head. Then he did. He went through his period of, you know, all crazy, have good times, all that kind of stuff. And now he's leveled out and he's really focused and he's playing his ass off. And I think he can be the goalie of the future for Team Canada.
I hope that you're right. I really do. And then listen, I don't have any evidence pointing to the contrary other than to just say that giving the reins to an unproven goaltender, and it's funny to say that about a multiple-time All-Star, a guy who is the backbone of the most heavily viewed organization in all of hockey, but to take somebody with relative inexperience on the international field and throw him in there just gives me that slight second of reservation.
But that's the thing.
Which is why I'm sending him there with Luongo and Brodeur behind him.
Exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, that's it. You give him his chance, and if he shits the bed, then you've got other fantastic goalies behind them to come in and step up who do have that experience and do have the pedigree and everything like that. But I think when we give him that chance, if and when we give him that chance, he's going to do well for us.
I like it. James, anything to add on that front?
No, like I'm right there with you where if he falters, I want a proven guy behind him. And that's why I'm bringing Luongo around. And I want Mike Smith there just because dude's a hell of a goalie and he's really big.
Yeah, I mean, hey, down to the lowest common denominator, take the guy who gives up the least amount of net.
Yeah, you know, and just give it a shot with him. Because at that point, if you're already getting down to Mike Smith, what the hell, man? It's a crapshoot at that point.
I love that philosophy, man. I mean, that's just you're in the bar and the lights are turning on, and if you got to go home with somebody, it might as well be Mike Smith.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you're going to get down to your third goalie, like, yeah, maybe Brodeur's the guy that you want there for the possible stability. But you know what? If random happenstances end up being that I need to play my third goalie at the Olympics, I want to pull one out of a hat that came out of left field that nobody saw coming and that nobody's prepared for.
I'm surprised you didn't take Dubnyk then. You've been doing it all nice.
I was thinking of it, but
I know you were
a better goalie.
Well, guys, I'm actually really interested to hear maybe that an elite young goaltender who has donned the Team Canada jersey, who has a Stanley Cup ring, nobody on this podcast is taking Marc-Andre Fleury to Russia.
I think he is shaky.
Yeah. I don't think he
at the best of times.
I think he had an amazing team in front of him when he won the Stanley Cup. He played very well. He played great hockey, yes.
You guys are killing me. But I was setting him up to be defended. Somebody was supposed to defend him. I was going to swoop in and tear him back down.
Can't do it.
You both jumped on his back. You're holding him underwater. I don't want to be the third set of hands drowning the guy.
Well, there's a reason why we didn't pick him, because we don't like him.
A lot of the other major outlets have got him picked as a number two or number three goaltender.
Because they're not as smart as we are.
Apparently.
Well, that's good. If I'm not mistaken, Ray Ferraro's three goalies were Carey Price, Cam Ward, and Fleury. That's wrong.
I would have considered Cam Ward in a third role, again, because of his ability to put a team on his back, and we have seen that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ward has won that big game by himself.
Fleury, yeah. Not so much.
Well, that's it. So if we were going to take a stab, if I was thinking along James's line of thought, which is, you know, hey, by the time there's nothing but chubbies left at the bar, you're just looking for somebody big enough to get you home, then, you know, we'll talk about Cam Ward.
I'm just saying. Mike
Smith. The Habs are going into a shootout.
Yeah, Buffalo tied it with like 1 second left.
Ooh, crazy. The way she goes, Bubs. The way she goes.
So, on that note, last week's picks, you guys were all right. I didn't do so well, but that's just because I'm letting you get ahead. Tonight's picks were looking good. Who do we pick, James?
Well, everyone was on the Penguins. And
who are 1-5-2.
Yeah, and everyone's on the Blackhawks.
Who are up 4-0 at the end of the first.
Yes.
All right, so we're not making up any ground here.
No, but I believe there's only one game tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's okay, because there's 50 tonight.
Yeah. So tomorrow night, Anaheim and Dallas. Who you got?
Dallas. Who's home? Dallas.
Dallas.
Dallas is playing tonight, correct?
Correct.
No, yes.
No, they're not.
No, they're not.
Dallas played last night. They played Edmonton.
Is Anaheim playing tonight?
No,
they're both coming in fresh tonight.
I'll take Anaheim on the road for the upset.
Adam?
Dallas.
I'm picking
Anaheim. Tiger with the winner!
I'm picking Anaheim on that one.
I want that Benino Noni kid to score 50 more goals. That guy was exciting to watch. My God, did he dominate that game last week.
I got a late email here.
Oh!
I know, crazy stuff.
Live listeners.
This one's from Anthony from Scarborough, Ontario. Hey guys, since last week, I swear Patrick Marleau has cooled off quite a bit. Has the peak of the Sharks season hit this early?
Probably. No. Keep your head down, Anthony.
I'm going to go with no on this one. I think the Sharks have shown that they've got a lot of talent in place right now. They were a little bit ridiculous out of the gate. I mean, look, if you're swinging at pitches over your head, it's only a matter of time before you miss one. I don't think they're going to win 7 out of every 8 games the whole way home for the season. But I do like, again, you talk about a goaltender that's been there. Anthony Niemi has done it. His numbers are not great, but he has been that guy. In a shortened season, that's going to be huge. Thornton, Marleau, big bodies that are not going to wear out nearly as quickly, I don't think, over 48 games as they would over 82. I kind of like what San Jose's got going right now. I know the team isn't great, but I expect to see Marleau and Thornton at least continue in the top 10 as the season progresses. Would you not agree with me, James?
I don't know. I don't think they're – Thornton's always in the top 10 in points, at least. I don't know. Marleau, I don't think he's going to finish in the top 10.
Really?
Maybe not.
Who do you think Thornton's going to pass to?
I don't know.
Where is he going to get these points from?
Well, that's the thing. I don't even really think Thornton's going to finish there. I know he's always there, but
Well, it comes back down to you just saying that the Canucks are the new Sharks, right? Like, Joe Thornton just keeps finishing in the top 10, but he's a disappointment.
Yeah, but I feel like eventually at some point the entire Tampa Bay Lightning is just going to take over the top 10 in scoring.
Well, they're certainly on pace for taking over the plus-minus. They got two guys that are plus 10 or better. We're less than 10 games into the season.
Yeah, Sammy Salo, Victor Hedman, both.
They're just not allowing shots on goal. They've had like 12 shots against so far this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the entire Tampa Bay Lightning team is just going to end up in the top 10 at some point.
Hey, making me look good for picking them early season, I'll tell you that. Anders Lindback is looking all right, too. You talk about a big body between the pipes.
Yeah, but he's not Canadian.
No, he's not Canadian. His name is Anders. I'm aware of that. I'm just saying, you talk about the philosophy of just throwing in a big body and hoping for the best. I mean, you pluck a guy out from behind Pekka Rinne. It's not like he's seen a whole lot of light of day.
Right now, Marleau and Thornton sit 9-10 in the league scoring. Yeah, whatever, 10 games through. I don't think that holds up.
Well, I guess we shall see. Adam, you want to be the tiebreaker on this vote?
James. I will tell you right now that Marleau will definitely be in the top 10 of scoring on San Jose. Will he be in the top 10 overall? No.
That is the worst prediction I have ever heard.
Disagree? Don't think he's going to be in San Jose's top 10?
Oh, jeez.
I think we are missing the X factor here, guys. The real determining factor of the Sharks' success this season is clearly going to hinge on the faulty knees and creaky back of Scott Gomez.
This is where he's going to come out of the woodwork and be a champion.
I've been predicting him to have a breakthrough season the last 3 years. If it finally happens in teal and orange, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Actually, I think...
bang for your buck.
I think the San Jose Sharks' success
hangs in the balance on two individuals.
One of them's got to be Dan Boyle.
Dan Boyle and Mark Edward Vlasic.
Mm. Pickle guy.
Heir to the Vlasic Pickle Empire.
I think the entire fate of the San Jose Sharks is going to rely very heavily on them.
No pressure on them if they're listening.
No, none whatsoever. I don't know. I think that's going to come to the top two D-men on that team having to be the top two D-men to get them to the next level.
Well, I really hope you're right. I've got Boyle in the in our little fantasy pool here.
Oh yeah, that's true. We've got the fantasy pool. There's been a little bit of movement in that thing. I don't know if you guys have been checking out the stats.
Every day it's shuffling. Sure has.
Right now, if your name is not Tony the Italian Stallion, granted we don't have tonight's results with the points and everything from there, but Tony the Italian Stallion taking a little bit of a lead on the Alphanator. I love these names. These are good.
Yeah, we know at least three clever people.
Yeah. Adam O. Wells, currently sitting 15th in the league, man. Good job.
14th.
What was that?
14th.
14th?
Yep.
Are you counting tonight's stats?
What?
Are you counting tonight?
No, I'm looking at standings as of yesterday.
No, the standings as of yesterday have you in 15th. 14th is Mickey. You're at 158.
Mickey's at 13. I have the 160. Oh, maybe this is tonight then.
Yeah, you are. You're looking at the wrong stats. You sure you're in charge of this thing?
Me?
because I have the exact stats as of, well, before tonight's action. You're
as do I.
That's 14, right there.
You're 15, man, at 158.
160.
You are looking at current standings. James was looking at standings entering today. This problem has been solved twice out loud if you would listen to each other.
I don't listen. Oh, by the way, the Habs have lost in the shootout. Goal came from Galchenyuk in the first round, and Vanek and Palmenville scored for the Sabres.
Well, there you go.
And right before we close out the show here, I just want to put a big what is up with Roberto the Italian Stallion sitting second to last.
Well, there can only be one Italian Stallion.
I feel as if Roberto was caught in the same train that I was, unfortunately, with some injuries. And some terrible picks.
Yeah, just some bad picks. The lovely Dr. Dale sitting above Kairos. What's up with that, man?
That's how they roll, man.
It's Lupul. It's the palindromous one. When Dion Phaneuf winds up, duck! Come on!
Yeah, some good stuff going on.
One thing to watch him clip a referee in the face. They're only there because they couldn't really make it anyway. But Lupul. Come on.
Oh, good stuff. So, you guys can keep track of those stats either by going to, I never even remember the website, or you can go check out
LostDraft.ca.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And if you would update it as often as you had originally said you would, we'd be in a good way.
Well, I forgot what the website was. So.
HockeyDraft.ca. Pool name OTKB space 2013.
There we go. I'm going to try and update the stats as often as possible. And you can go check out, we've got the predictions going on at the top of the page as well. We're going to see who gets ultimate bragging rights at the end of the season. I'm
excellent.
It's going to be me.
No, it won't.
Yeah, it will.
Now,
I don't plan on losing to somebody who wasn't motivated enough to sign up for their own fantasy pool.
Yeah, you jerk.
I totally 100% went to sign up, but it
3 days late.
It was like the day after.
The day after, yeah. It's not like I sent you 65 emails leading up until that day saying, hey, don't forget to sign up.
And it started on a ridiculously arbitrary day, like the first day of the hockey season.
Oh,
who can remember that?
I think I went to sign up like halfway through Saturday that night because I'm on West Coast. I don't go by your Eastern Standard Time, whatever.
For the record,
over here.
For the first 2 weeks of this hockey draft, it was set to West Coast time.
Oh, was it?
Yes, sir.
I don't know. I swear I tried to sign up right before the Oiler game that Saturday. Actually, no, the Oiler.
If only you had been forewarned for weeks in advance that this was happening. I'm sorry. It must be my bad. I'm sorry, bud.
Hey, you know what? When you have a seven-month-old child, you can talk to me then.
Well, keep it in your pants next time, Hotshot. Hockey.
That is going to do it for this evening. Thanks for listening if you're still there. If not, we don't care about you guys either. K-Ross.
Good night.
Adam.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Don't forget to check out www.offthecrossbar.com. And always remember that is crossbar with a K.
Actually, yeah, I just put something up there last night. You can go check that out. It's
worth reading.
Look at broadcasting in other cities. Weird. I'm telling
Groovy.
You. Oh, jeez. It's like every night is a night with Bob Cole. It sucks.
Sounds horrible.
It really is. That's it. Hopefully Adam's going to put something up on the site, but, you know, Adam in writing, you never know. It's never a good combination.
Hot calling the kettle black.
Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you guys probably 5 minutes before next week's show. Until then, each and every one of you has just gone off the crossbar.